The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, of course, you would be well aware at this stage, investigations ongoing in the US as to how a shooter was able to get so close to Donald Trump. We've heard from the different analysts right throughout the day here on the station about how this might change the tone and tempo of the upcoming election. But our own reporter, Josh Crosby, is in the US. He is in Milwaukee at the Republican National Convention. Josh, what's happening?
Good evening, Kieran, or good morning here from Milwaukee in the state of Wisconsin. So today is day one of the Republican National Convention. All shapes and sizes of Republicans, Trump fans, the MAGA movement, those who are protesting against him, and the press all have their eyes on Milwaukee this week. For 4 days, this city of around 500,000 people, it'll become the epicenter for Republican politics and sadly, even more so world politics and current affairs following the shooting on Saturday. I'm not sure where you were, Kieran, when the news started breaking, but I was packing for this trip because I was flying out yesterday morning and then the rolling news coverage started. So to say this whole event and logistics around it has changed is an understatement.
I'm sure it has, and not something organisers and Trump aides would have been preparing for. What does it mean for the convention itself, Josh?
Well, it's still early days, Kieran, and last night there was a get-together for those arriving to Milwaukee. Small and large venues have different themed events on, but the real business starts this evening, just after 5 o'clock. The first night of convention opens up at the Pfizer Forum State. This is the home to the Milwaukee Bucks basketball team. We can expect speeches, appointments, a rallying call for success, a space for Republicans to come together and, I suppose, show their support for their presidential candidate. Usually, the conventions are on paper, meant to be when the candidate is selected, but the dog on the street knows, look, it's Trump. I'm not so certain will the Democratic convention in a month's time in Chicago have the same clarity leading into it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what impact that shooting has on Joe Biden and how likely he is or isn't to be on the ticket. The security, as you say, I'm sure it's off the scales, would be anyway, but certainly so after that shooting. I mean, can you walk freely around or how does it work?
Well, look, Kieran, I can safely say I've never witnessed a security presence like this. I would have followed the current president, Joe Biden, when he travelled around Ireland last year, and I thought that was as big as you could go. The Secret Service, the suits, the shades, you know that look. But this is just another level entirely. There are thousands of police officers brought in from across the country to help out. The security was always going to be heightened. Even last week, before the shooting, reports were coming out that police were saying the event could be an attractive target for violent extremists. Public transport is being curtailed. There are only certain parts of the city public can enter. Streets are blocked off with concrete barriers and big steel fences around 5 metres high. There's different levels of access. Your security passes will get you in. So look, they've broken the perimeter up into two different sections. Protesters, those demonstrating, are only allowed in certain sections. And wait for it, Kieran. Just wait for it. Something that jumped out to me when I was preparing for this trip was that guns are permitted in the outer area. The right to bear arms and all that. But then tennis balls are banned. Let's hear from a man who's here to support Trump. So I met with Christopher O'Brien and he told me his ancestors actually hailed from Carrigaline. So if there are any O'Briens listening in Cork who have a relative out here, then I can vouch he's certainly a staunch Trump fan. Chris says people are sick of the current administration.
We're looking for change, yes. And here, Trump was in for 4 years and Biden's been in for 4 years, so people can compare the two. Which 4 years did you prosper and do better with?
Well, what is it that you want change in, or what are you not satisfied with the current?
Oh, inflation here in America is out of control. But look at the world, too. I mean, even I think Donald Trump had a lot. He keeps saying that, well, so-and-so, you know, Putin or Xi liked him. Well, he means that they respected him. And as a consequence, there was no war in Ukraine. There was no war in Israel. We don't have the threats in China, and we were booming, and now everything is so expensive under Biden, and look at the chaos we have right now.
So you think having Trump in place could prevent some of these wars?
I absolutely do. I think he's a negotiator. He's a businessman. He understands that other world leaders are working for their interests, including for Ireland or England and Europe. But he has respect for them. But he can always likes to strike a deal.
How did you feel when you saw the news? What was that like? Where did you first hear it? And how was that just to take in as a Republican?
I just drove 4 hours from Grand Rapids. I was just coming into town. My mother called me up and said, hey, the president's been shot. And when I saw it, I was in a restaurant and saw the footage. I was like, holy cow, they came so close to killing him. And it almost brings tears to my eyes because I can't believe that this has almost happened in this day and age.
And did it make you reconsider your trip here or contemplate your safety? Or
No, because I'm a Catholic and I think that we're all put on this earth to do certain things. We'll do what we have to do. No, we got to be here. We have to be here.
And with this shooting now, is there a sense of... not fear, but like, are people a bit more tense or a bit more nervous around the city today?
I think so. I think there's some more anxiety for especially visitors coming into a city they've never been to before. So they're nervous, but I mean, thank God they're coming to Wisconsin. We are some of the friendliest people ever.
Christopher O'Brien there in Milwaukee. What's next, Josh?
Well, I just made my way down to a part of the city where demonstrators are gathering now to protest against Trump's and the Republican policies. There's a speech that's being made. I don't know if you can hear some of the megaphones in the background. There are different groups from across the country. There's a table where they're making their signs. I'm looking out now. There's slogans like "Lock him up," "Stop the genocide." There's a strong presence showing support for Palestine, Gaza. I can even see an Irish flag in the crowd. But we're never too far away from a protest, are we?
All right. Well, listen, we will touch base again a little bit later in the show with our own reporter, Josh Crosby, from the RNC, the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. But Matt Mayer is with me now, former senior official in the Bush administration, political commentator as well. Matt, if we shift focus back to what happened on Saturday night, the shooting, I mean, you and your fellow countrymen and countrywomen have had 2 days now to digest what happened. How would you describe the general mood of the nation?
Yeah, I mean, I think Americans are still in shock at what happened on Saturday night and trying to process kind of what it means for America. Where are we as a country when, you know, this happens? I mean, we haven't had something like this in 43 years. So it's a big deal. It's one of those moments of where were you when you found out, right? That's the kind of historic moment it's going to be. It is now for Americans, and I suspect lots of people across the world.
Is there any sense of this possibly serving as a kind of a unifying moment for people and for politics in the States?
I think we have a moment for that to occur. And what I'm hearing is Trump is going to try to do a more unifying speech on Thursday when he accepts the nomination for the presidency, for the Republican Party, and try to be more conciliatory, try to use the moment to be, you know, bigger about, you know, America, and we've got to turn the corner and get away from this kind of divisive, hateful rhetoric that's driven us to Saturday night, essentially.
What impact do you suspect, Matt, this might have on the race itself?
I think, and I thought this within minutes of Saturday night, the race is over. It was sort of over after the debate when Joe Biden looked, as we've all been seeing him, but so kind of, you know, the competency issue was there and it came full force. And now I think when kind of independent Americans or those on the fence saw Trump rise back up so forcefully and powerfully, I think it erased any doubt. And as your reporter in Milwaukee with the interview he had with the you know, Irish American said, you know, you can compare the 4 years for both men, and they're just so starkly different in terms of what happened and the impact on Main Street America. And so I think it's now you know, virtually over, especially in those swing states where the election gets decided. I think Trump's going to win all of them.
And why would that happen, Matt? Is it because I've heard differing kind of views? Some people suggesting that, you know, just by sheer force of that image of Donald Trump with his fist raised in the air, the American flag behind him, already iconic. I mean, it's only less than 48 hours old, that picture, and we will be looking at it from now until kingdom come, that it will sway independents. It might even sway a few, you know, kind of uneasy Democratic voters. I've heard others suggest actually it's more that it energizes the Trump base, and, you know, the Biden base is very unenergized, and, you know, that's the consequence of it. What's your read?
I think it's an all of the above, frankly. I think it energizes the Republican base and it gets people to say, you know, look, if he can do that, we got to show up and do our thing too. And then I think there are the independents and even some Democrats I've seen on social media today saying, look, I've always been skeptical, da, 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 da. But boy, what I saw on Saturday and how he reacted, you know, that's who we need when we've got, you know, Putin's in Ukraine, right? The, you know, Hamas is doing stuff in Israel. We've got, you know, Xi doing stuff in the South China Sea. You've got Venezuela, you know, trying to hit, you know, the oil targets from other countries. So there is North Korea's redoing ballistic missiles. So I think, again, this is then where people say the contrast. They go back to under Trump, there wasn't this global instability. The economy was doing well until the pandemic hit. And so I think that is just going to capture people that were on the fence or, you know, not sure. And I think that's where it's going to be a fairly strong win for Trump in November.
And has this caused much of a kind of a national conversation yet, Matt, about some of the other issues that kind of swirl around an event like this, around gun ownership or even about the toxicity of politics in general? Or is it all being viewed through the prism of the looming election at the moment?
No, I mean, I think it's raising the issue of the rhetoric, right? I don't think it's going to kind of have much of a gun debate because there have been worse shootings and deaths and that's just a Second Amendment issue that I know lots of non-Americans don't quite understand. But it is getting to this issue of, you know, when you have people like Joy Reid and Rachel Maddow say Trump's going to round up black and gay people and put them in concentration camps. When magazines on the left are comparing him to Adolf Hitler, who killed 11 million people in gas chambers, right? We have Joe Biden saying things like, you know, he's a threat to America. He's going to end democracy. He's a dictator. That stuff just got to stop. Like, it's not true. It's so far off to the left. It's energizing people that are sick. So I think it's going to start that debate of, we got to cool the engines here, folks, yeah, and stop with this, you know, anti-MAGA Republican, these deplorables, these people that need to be re-educated. That's got to end and stop.
Yeah, but there's kind of a bit of a plague on both your houses in that regard as well, isn't there?
I don't think so, Kieran. No? I just don't. There is not that much rhetoric coming from the right that reaches that level of toxicity. There just isn't. I mean, we talk about Biden's competency. We talk about his policies on the border. But you're not seeing people say, you know, Joe Biden is like, you know, Hitler, or he's like, you know, Pol Pot. You're not seeing people say Joe Biden's going to end our democracy.
You're right. They don't paint him as a demagogue or a monster in waiting the same way that Trump is. And I do find it hard to kind of counter that argument when that criticism is made of the Democrats. But say in terms of, I guess you could criticize Trump or Trump supporters in terms of the legitimization maybe of violence. Some might say, you know, there's good people on both sides in Charlottesville, or the January 6th rioters deserve to be pardoned. Or Trump has said, you know, Democrats kind of want to stand back and let Antifa burn cities to the ground. You know, he's kind of said that. So, and it's a kind of a suggestion that, you know, particularly the January 6th one, the kind of, you know, violence, political violence can be justified if you've got right on your side.
Well, so first of all, the good people on both sides has been debunked as a hoax, right? That he didn't say that. If you listen to the whole clip, he specifically, you know, didn't denounce white supremacists and nationalists, right? That actually heard, even Scopes has said that was incorrect and a hoax. But in January 6th, there are lots of people that merely trespassed that were over prosecuted that do deserve to be pardoned because they didn't commit violence or destruction of the building. The folks who did that, absolutely, they should pay the price for what they did. And I don't think anybody says that those folks should be pardoned. I think Trump is referring to the nonviolent folks who were just trespassing. That's what they got hit with in this 512 charge that the Supreme Court has said is bad. But the left did allow the burning of cities. They did not prosecute all the Antifa folks that in 17, 18, 20, 22 were burning cities. They had to shut down the White House. Those things did happen, and those folks were not prosecuted. So that there is a double standard that has been deployed by the Biden Justice Department that we need to get back to. If you do bad things, whether you're on the right or the left, you are prosecuted for those bad things, period, and not have politics drive outcomes.
The mechanics of the race also change, don't they? I guess I heard a kind of a story earlier today, Matt, that the Biden administration had several million dollars kind of set aside for attack ads on Donald Trump that were going to run this week, the same week of the Republican National Convention. They obviously can't do that now. It would look in extremely poor taste to be running those ads after the man had been shot at the weekend. I wonder as well, Matt, what impact this will have on the decision Joe Biden has to make about whether he's going to run again. That was getting all the oxygen in the room up until Saturday.
Yeah. It was, and I think that auction is now gone. I think that the left knows they're going to lose, so they might as well stick with what they've got and just power forward. And yes, you're right.
Does the logic not work the other way? That if you know you're going to lose, well, then you may as well try anything to win.
Well, but then you look desperate, and then you start risking things like, you know, a massive debacle happening at the Democrat National Committee convention, right? A huge amounts of infighting that then turn more people away. And look, MSNBC pulled Joe Scarborough and Micah, you know, Morning Joe, off the air this morning because they couldn't trust that they or their guest wouldn't say something crazy as they've been saying for so long. So you're seeing that impact on the left realizing, like, they've had some folks out there doing stuff.
Oh, We seem to have lost Matt there, but we were almost out of time anyway. Always interesting to talk to Matt and get his views, even though some people on the text line profoundly disagree with them. Matt Mayer is a former senior official in the Bush administration, political commentator as well. Like I say, Josh is still at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee today. Somebody described today as the Taylor Swift merchandise day. It is day one of the convention, but apparently it is all about selling MAGA hats and MAGA t-shirts, and the real stuff, the real business gets going tomorrow. Anyway, we're going to talk to Josh a little bit later. Like I said a little bit earlier, Josh Crosby, our reporter, is on the ground in Milwaukee at the Republican National Convention. We're going to talk to him a little bit later about the continued political fallout to that assassination attempt on Saturday evening on the former president and the would-be future president. But I know a lot of the focus, or certainly some of the focus afterwards, was on the security detail, about how well they had prepared for this situation and how they reacted afterwards. And the reality is, most of us watching this and most of us commenting and offering our two cents and our hot takes have no real knowledge about how all of this world works. But Rupal Patel does. Rupal, former CIA field agent, two-time CEO, corporate strategist and executive advisor. Rupal, you're very welcome to The Hard Shoulder and thank you so much for speaking to us. How big an operation are these types of events, these speaking engagements from a security perspective?
Oh, I mean, absolutely massive. They will have been, you know, looking at the layout, the plans, the you know, sort of the routes both in and out of the site. There, you know, these all of these speaking engagements, the security details do all of the canvassing and all of the sort of intelligence gathering and looking for points of weakness and all of that assessment and analysis weeks and weeks in advance. So in the run up, they would have done a lot of homework.
So all of that homework, then, notwithstanding, a lot of people have focused on how close the shooter got on this flat roof to the former president. How do you think he got to that building?
The reality is, I mean, there's still so much uncertainty about all of what happened. And it is, you know, still so recent. There's been so much speculation in the media about what's been happening. And so, to be honest, at this point, I don't want to add any more confusion or speculation. But the sad reality is that, you know, sometimes, no matter how good your planning, your security, your preparation, all of these things, things just slip through the cracks. You know, we've had intruders break into Buckingham Palace. There have been intruders who've been able to break into, you know, senators' homes and the White House. And so, you know, what the security forces will now all be really focusing on is exactly that question: is how did this happen, and what do we need to change? Was this a critical systemic failure, or was this just a one-off something, you know, that sort of slipped under our radar? And trying to figure out what needs to change in the future.
How nervous do Secret Service personnel get about these types of engagements? So this is a town of about, I think, 13,000 people. So kind of a small enough little place. But the former president out in the open for long periods. So that's part and parcel of any election campaign, is, you know, out and pressing the flesh with the public. I mean, it's the type of thing that politicians love to do. In my mind, those Secret Service personnel probably hate it.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, you know, anything that exposes the person that you're protecting to, you know, being as out and, as you said, as publicly vulnerable as this is, you know, is not ideal. And yet this is what the Secret Service trains for, right? They know that this is the job that any politician, any former president, any current president that they are protecting is going to be doing exactly that. They have to be public. They have to go out and engage with their voters or prospective voters. And they, while they don't enjoy it, of course, this is what they are hired to do. And they are prepared for it, and they train for many, many different scenarios to make sure that they can at least prepare as tangibly as possible for the many different potential scenarios that they will confront in the real world.
So what was your assessment then of how they reacted once shots were fired?
I mean, it was pretty instantaneous, as you would expect of such a highly trained, you know, sort of security personnel. The fact that the snipers on the roof, you know, again, got to the shooter within seconds or milliseconds even, you know, it just shows that the instincts and the reflexes were spot on. And now, again, the homework is going to be to figure out, well, why did we even have to go into crisis response mode? What happened? But as far as, you know, once there was an unfolding imminent threat, they responded, you know, as they were trained to do very quickly.
The whole world at this stage has seen that photo. It's already iconic, whatever people think about the politics of the man, an iconic photo of him with his fist in the air and the American flag behind him. It was interesting. I was listening to somebody who works in security as well earlier today, who suggested that actually some people in the detail will be a little kind of disappointed when they see the photo, in the sense that, you know, Donald Trump, that the man they were protecting, managed to kind of get head and shoulders back out into public view above all of the Secret Service personnel.
Yeah. I mean, you know, adrenaline, does incredible things. And I imagine that, you know, the former president was, you know, he responded instinctively and was pumped full of adrenaline in that moment. But yes, his security detail perhaps need to work on their weight training.
So in the aftermath, not the immediate aftermath, we've talked about that. But I mean, now, a couple of days later, what tends to happen on the security side of things? Does it get ramped up?
Well, what they'll all be doing now is exactly what I outlined earlier. You know, what went wrong? How did this happen? All of that after action review that goes on is to identify exactly why they found themselves in this situation. What were the cracks? What were the things that they didn't predict or didn't plan for? And effectively going through that, a very long and drawn out, you know, rightfully so, process to understand, well, what do we know? Don't we know? And how are you going to fill those gaps so that this kind of a thing is much less likely to occur into the future?
Rupal Patel, thank you so much for speaking to us here on The Hard Shoulder. Rupal is a former CIA field agent, two-time CEO, corporate strategist and executive advisor.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.